Good evening and welcome to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. This program is all about music and the people who make it. Tonight, Northwest Indiana guitarist, songwriter, and bandleader Joe Marsnick is with us. He has toured nationally from New York to L.A. and just about every major city in between, and even a few that aren't major. He and his self-named group have garnered critical acclaim in most of those cities with their live performances, and we're going to talk to him tonight about a new album called Slink. We're going to feature songs from it. He's going to talk about music and songwriting and why his band is ever evolving. Experiencing Joe Marsnick is something of an anomaly because there is no typical show. Every show is different. He creates a musical cocktail of Chicago blues, New Orleans music, psychedelic rock, jazz fusion, blues, you name it, it's in the blender, and it's all Joe Marsnick. We're going to find out what he sounds like by starting off right now and letting the music do the talking. This is the opening track of that new album I was talking about, Slink. This is George Washington. Thank you. Get your funky self in order on that one. It is George Washington off the Slink album. That is the Joe Marsnick Band, and just a lot of players on that. One very famous one we're going to get to in just a little bit. But right now, the band leader, the namesake, Joe Marsnick, is in the house with us here on Lakeshore Public Radio's Midwest Beat. Welcome, Joe.
Tom, thank you so much for having me on.
You have got a very funky side to you, I'll tell you. Every time I see you, you are just all over the place. The sound is always changing, always evolving. As I mentioned, it's kind of a cocktail of sounds, never quite the same. Now, with that song, it's been out a few months now, this CD, Slink. When you perform that live, it probably sounds only similar. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say just about every night it's going to have a different interpretation, depending on the different players. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, big time.
Now, why is it that your sound is so different from what else is in the Midwest here? I mean, you have more of the Colorado kind of sound, I guess the jam band kind of sound, a little more L.A., some of the session sounds, some fusion in there that brings me to New York. But I'm not hearing this kind of sound in the Midwest. I'm hearing more singer-songwriter stuff in the Midwest.
Yeah, I think it's out there. It just maybe doesn't get a big hold in the Midwest for whatever reason that is. You know, obviously out in Colorado, there's probably more of a fan base for this type of stuff, but it's definitely out there. There's some great local bands that are doing it, like, you know, the Caught on Klein guys.
I've heard of them. Yeah, I've not seen them yet.
You know, not exactly like my sound, but it has that more organic groove, mm-hmm. kind of funky thing to it. So I think it's there. It's just maybe not as widespread as maybe the singer-songwriter stuff.
I like your sound because, to me, it was something that replaced Freak Johnson. Because Freak Johnson was one of my favorite bands many years. And they haven't played out a lot in the last few years. And you guys have kind of stepped into that void, at least with me. So I'm thinking that might be the case with others because they had a big following.
Oh, we used to sneak into the Naughty Grapes on Thursday nights to watch them play. Yeah, on my first CD, a buddy, the bass player, played on there, and Waz, the keyboardist. They were both mm-hmm. on my first CD, so yeah, that's a huge influence.
I just saw Waz two nights ago. He was playing piano at the theater at the center.
Oh, in Munster?
Yeah. He was doing a solo piano thing for a reception that was there, and it was like, that's Waz.
Oh, yeah. I think he does the Sunday brunches, too.
Yeah, he's a very big talent. Now, you have a rotating cast of musicians, and it's unique. Why do you do that? You're the only band I know that almost every time you see you, there's different players. You may have one or two carryovers, mm-hmm. but there's always different players. And like you said, there's always a change in sound. It's like your music is like a live, breathing entity. It's always evolving, always moving, always shape-shifting, so to speak.
Yeah, I would say when I first kind of really got into music towards the end of high school and into college, there was all these jam festivals were creeping up, big history from New Orleans, and just this lively something about being in the moment and being alive and something different, you know, kind of fed this whole jam culture. And what everyone really liked about it was that every night you didn't know what was going to happen. There was mm-hmm. the bands would go off script, play songs for 30 minutes, play songs you never heard before, but it would always be something different every night. And so I think that was built into my ethos, you know, growing up, that was something I was really attracted to. And then when I would go see concerts, my favorite part of every night was when, you know, maybe a member of the opening band sat in. And so there was that moment of something different. And so I always, you know, when I started playing, I always liked to jam with other people and ask other bands to have guys sit in. I tried to sit in with other bands. And so as I started doing that more and more, it just kind of became, you know, my thing and almost a challenge to myself of, can you go out there every night and even if it's not rehearsed, make something happen, have a real authentic moment every night that makes you feel alive, makes everyone feel like it was worth it for that one moment when everything clicked, even if we fell apart mm-hmm. and a bunch of songs, you know, were train wrecks. But there was that one moment of pure joy that is like, it's ecstasy, you know, it makes you want to drive all over the country and do this every night because it's so real. And I think as kind of the way the crazy culture is going nowadays, we don't get those real authentic moments all that often.
I remember when I was just getting into covering bands professionally, there was Freddie Jones Band was out there, Colonel Bruce Hampton, the Aquarium Rescue Unit. They were we just lost him actually, but what an amazing group that blew my mind, to use an old phrase. When I listened to that Aquarium Rescue Unit, I'm like, wow, that's all I could say. It's like, wow, what are they doing here? But I couldn't take the needle out of the groove. I kept putting it back on. And actually, if you go back even further, Grateful Dead were very much in that mindset. They probably invented that mindset. They made some great records, but they're not known as a recording act. They're known as a live band. And you listen to one of their hits on the record, you may not recognize it for halfway through the song in a live concert. Dark Star comes to mind.
Oh, big time.
My God, that was a concert in itself. I mean, sometimes that would last 40, 50 minutes, depending on who was on stage with them.
Yep. And it's funny when I play with these different players, and we'll talk about songs that we're going to do, and maybe we do a Grateful Dead song. And some of the people that don't know the Grateful Dead, they'll go back and learn the studio version, where other guys have never even heard the studio version.
Right. And so, there's so many live versions. Yeah, I mean, which one do you
pick? The 90s, the 80s, the 70s.
All the Dix picks out there, all the taper stuff. So you never know what version to learn. That's kind of funny because, you know, when you're talking jazz, and so if you're talking about the arrangements and whether it's this guy the arranger or that guy, and the same song can sound universally different. I've just sat in with an orchestra recently to catch their show, and they were rehearsing, and they were calling on, is this the Don Costa version? Is this the Nelson Riddle version?
Of course.
Because it was a Sinatra tune, and there's so many different styles, even a Sinatra song. Now, when you do that, when you do a jam, and you're jamming with someone for the first time, do you rehearse, or is it more spontaneous?
Never a rehearsal.
Okay.
And I do that on purpose. I don't do any rehearsals. I'll send songs back and forth beforehand, like I'll send them my CD and my charts, and then we'll pick, you know, a few cover songs that either we both know, or if there's a certain artist, you know, that wants to play some of their catalog. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was out on the West Coast playing with George Porter Jr. He was the bass player for the Meters.
Okay.
Correct. Legend. Huge. Like, can't believe I'm even playing with this guy. But, you know, and then we'll pick some of the Meters tunes because naturally that's his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the joy of what I do is when we all come together and it's sound check and, you know, there's that uneasy tension in the air of you don't know what's going to happen. And I thrive on that because it forces the best out of everyone. You don't know what's going to happen, so you're purely relying on instincts. I've got to listen and I've got to pay attention. How many times you go see a band and they're just going through the motions?
Going through the motions,
yeah. It's the worst thing. And so that kind of was something that started to happen to me, I noticed, in some of the bands I was playing with. And I wanted to get further, as far away of it as possible. And how do you do that? You have a different band every night, so you can't go through the motions.
So it's always fresh.
Right. And so I've played these songs, you know, or my original songs, I don't know, I do 300 shows a year. You know, you do the math, over 10 years. I've played these songs a lot. But every night I'm discovering something new about these songs because there's a different interpretation. A different drummer puts a different feel to it, you know, a different turnaround. And so every night you stay inspired and even more inspired because you want to keep the consistency level high of playing with these amazing musicians. Now I come back here, I want to bring that energy back. So it brings everyone up.
Now, you have two albums out, correct?
Two original albums, yeah. Both Sides was released in 2012, and then this just came out technically in December of last year.
And we were talking off air, of course, for a long time. You were part of Fresh Hops, too, which was very similar in style, although you didn't change members.
Right, yeah. So more the original kind of version of Fresh Hops was all instrumental, and definitely I was one of the primary songwriters. So, yeah, the early sound, now as we lost a couple of members and regrouped, it kind of changed, but we still had that kind of go-anywhere instrumental feel to it.
Now, does some of that material seep its way into your shows because your fan base overlapped?
Oh, correct. Yeah, I do a couple of tunes. Naturally, because we had the violin and Fresh Hops, if you don't have the violin, it's kind of hard to replace that sound. So I haven't done a lot of...
It was Gowans, right?
Stefan Gowans. Cook.
Oh, Cook.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the other thing is the Fresh Hops songs were a little more difficult, so it's not something that I would say you can just throw to the wind. You know, you kind of have to rehearse it or at least know it, you know, so I'm not calling some of these harder tunes when it's just a jam, you know, and we're all getting together having fun. But I've been thinking about dusting some of the old ones out coming up here.
Now, as a band leader, you're unique. There's a lot of jam bands. As a band leader, you remind me in many ways of like Frank Zappa. Zappa would handpick his people, whether it was Jean-Luc Ponty or Colaiucci or any of these different guys that were outstanding players in their own. He would handpick every tour different members to be the mothers. Now, how do you go about handpicking these artists? Because, like I said, it's always changing, and the bigger the shows, the bigger the names usually.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I think being a band leader is another skill that I'm learning. You know, you don't think about it, but it is definitely a skill of how do you put certain people together and different combinations. It's kind of like cooking. You know, you put different flavors in, but you're still making the same dish. So a lot of it, you know, when I played with Bernie Worrell, that was just a legend who I always admired and wanted to work with. So when you have someone like him, it comes down to scheduling. When is he free? When can I set up the dates? So I'd say scheduling is probably a big part of the reason why I put certain lineups together. Because a lot of these guys I'll only work with once or twice a year.
Right.
Like tomorrow I'm playing at the House Pub in St. Charles, Illinois with Marty Salmon, Buddy Guy's piano player. And Buddy, you know, keeps a crazy busy schedule, so Marty maybe only is free two or three weekends a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're developing chemistry over, you know, only seeing each other once or twice a year. It's a really crazy kind of way to develop a chemistry, but every time we play, it gets better and better.
You mentioned Bernie Worrell, and of course, he is no longer with us. So you're talking about playing with someone once or twice a year. Now you'll never get to play with him. Was that your first time playing when he recorded with you?
No. In 2015, we did three weekends where we'd go out and play three or four shows at a time. So we did that three times over 2015. The last one was New Year's going into 2016.
Okay.
And I was telling him that the following week we were going out to record. So I, you know, ask him if he'd like to be a part of it, and he was totally open, just one of the most amazing people I ever met.
Now, for those that aren't familiar with Bernie, I know him best from the P-Funk years, working with Bootsy and George Clinton, The Mothership, and
one of the main songwriters, too.
I mean, that's another band in itself, all the P-Funk stuff that's kind of like what you do. They were always interchanging, you know, the Parlettes and all these different groups within a group. Let's play the song that you did with Bernie off Slink. This is aptly titled Bernie, and you're hearing it now. Joe will be with us on the other side.
Thank you.
Oh, what a great song that is, Bernie, named after the man himself, Bernie Worrell, who is the guy in P-Funk, Talking Heads. I forgot about Talking Heads. He was the keyboard player there. And he was a guest on this wonderful album that's called Slink. It's been out a little less than a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Marcinick Band is who released it. Joe Marcinick is with us. He is the band leader. And to say the term band is almost misleading because it is a project. It is a project. I mean, it's not a – when I think of band, it's set members.
Right.
A project is an ever-evolving case scenario. And that seems to be this. What was it like – this was the only time you recorded with Bernie, correct? You played with him.
But. And actually, we weren't even in the same room because he was pretty sick by the time he recorded. He was living out in Bellingham, Washington at the time. And we went out to Littleton, Colorado at Scanhope Sound to record this.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that track there, Bernie, we didn't have a name for it. We just had, you know, the basic skeleton of it. I didn't have a melody or anything. And I just knew that would be the perfect kind of funky thing for Bernie to do.
So you sent him the skeleton and let him fill it out?
Right. So we just sent him the track, didn't give him any pointers, didn't say anything. And that's what we got back. And it was like, I remember the first time hearing it, my head about exploded. It was like, wow. And so then, you know, that was end of March. He passed away beginning of June. And you know, a couple months later, I found out it was his last ever recording. It was on my CD.
Wow. And that's a real honor. And he did some of his last live gigs with you, too.
That's correct.
How did you meet him? I mean, he's way up the food chain, so to speak. You're a guy from Northwest Indiana. And yet, you know, his final recordings, his final performances are with you. And clearly he seemed to enjoy himself doing it.
Yeah, randomly I met him at the NAMM show in Anaheim, California back in 2006. And that's back when I was a college student at Indiana State. And he was just doing a booth for, I think it was Dave Smith Instruments.
Okay.
And there was no one there. And me and my buddy Joel Meyer just went up to him and talked to him for like an hour. Because no one was messing with him. And so we just had this great conversation. And he gave me some really good advice. One of the things he said was he always liked to do opposites. So if something is really, you know, dirty, funky, he liked to put something classical or clean to contrast it.
Mm-hmm.
And he always just had these perfect compliments for everything he played. And so we got to talking. I got his email. And then, you know, a couple of years later when I started playing out, I just cold called him, emailed up, said, hey, would you like to do some gigs? And once we worked out the numbers, made it happen. And, you know, sometimes you got to take a risk in life to do things you really want to do. And I can't, you know, lie and tell you that I'm making a bunch of money. Honestly, I've lost a bunch of money, and Highland Pawn Shop has a lot of my gear, or has had a lot of my gear coming in and out of there, but I've been able to live my dream and play with these guys, and I don't think you can put a price on that.
You travel around the country, and you make a living with music. I mean, you're eating, you're sleeping, you're getting a room over your head most nights.
Sometimes
most
sleeping.
occasional sofa maybe at a friend's house. But you are living the bohemian musician's life. And you are, if nothing else, a musician. You have that lifestyle. You have that persona. You have that soul, that old soul. Like a bluesman, like an old bluesman.
Yeah, so someone kind of compared it to Chuck Berry, where you just go to a different town and pick up a different band and start, you know, count it off and start playing. So, yeah, I've been all over this country twice this year, probably almost 100,000 miles just in this year alone. And it's been amazing.
What's your favorite places to play?
That's kind of hard, you know. I got down to Key West and played the Green Parrot this year, and that was just simply amazing. Playing New York City, American Beauty was, you know, just – and, of course, the one day I played was a blizzard, you know. 13 inches of snow came through. playing out in San Francisco, and you could just feel that spirit of a lot of the music that had started out there. New Orleans is – unlike anywhere else in the country. But last Saturday, I played Buddy and Pals in Schererville, and that's got its own charm because it's 5 minutes from my house, and there's something about coming back home and playing to all my friends and family. So I don't have a favorite place. There's just there's too much out there. There's too much good stuff. Yeah, just same thing with the band, you know, trying to make everything as good as you can. And that's easier said than done, but you got to work at it. You got to push to bring some kind of joy out of life.
What's next at this point? You've got your second album out. It's been about a year. Are you working on new material?
Yeah, I got a bunch of new material. I got to afford it. and that's sad because I had one of the greatest things that ever happened to me before we recorded Slink. I did one of those GoFundMes, the crowdfunders, and we raised over $10,000.
Did that surprise you?
Blew me away. That's insane. How can you even, you know, quantify that? It's about 300 people too that helped me raise it. It just humbles you and makes you more inspired to work harder and to keep doing what you do.
Now, were these people just here in your home turf, or these people all over the country?
All over the country, and that was 2 years ago. I've made a lot of connections since then. So, it really. You know, it's the small benchmarks along the way that let you know you're on the right path and you're doing the right thing, and to keep taking it further. So this year I've really had a chance to play with some other legends like the George Porter I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one the first or second weekend in December with Melvin Seals, who was the Jerry Garcia Band organ player.
Right. I knew that name sounded familiar.
Legend in his own right. So we're going to do Indianapolis on the 7th, Peoria, Illinois on the 8th, and then Martyrs.
Where are you playing in Peoria?
Country Club Barbecue.
Okay.
And then Martyrs in Chicago on December 9th. That also features Tony Hall from Dumpst Funk and Alan Evans from Soul Live.
Now, something else, he's been on the show before, and I've had a chance to do some coverage with him, is Kofi Baker.
Oh, Kofi!
Now, he's playing some shows. Now, those that know the show guy probably are familiar with the fact he's been on there. This is Ginger Baker from Cream's son, who is, in his own right, a monster drummer.
Woo!
That guy is incredible. And he's been living right here in the region.
In Hobart, yeah.
And playing, you know, with Zeke here and there, playing with you here and there. And do you see him becoming more of a permanent player with you? Because it seems some of the bigger shows he's doing with you.
We've had some really fun, especially this past year. I've gotten to do probably 15, 20 shows with him. All together now. And yeah, he's just this loose, easygoing, funny guy, and it comes through in his playing. So it's almost like we're joking with each other when we're playing mm-hmm. music. But yeah, and it's cool too because I think he likes the Grateful Dead and that kind of music, the jam stuff, but I don't think he normally gets to play that. You know, for better or worse, he's kind of stuck in the Cream world.
Right.
And hey, if my dad was Ginger Baker, I'd be playing that music a bunch too.
Right.
So we do a little bit of it, you know, a couple of tunes. But it's really fun just to take everything way out, you know, and really jam whatever we're playing out. And he's such a good drummer that he can make any style fly. So he plays my originals, plays Grateful Dead, plays blues, and then we'll do Cream. And
now,
yeah.
Does he tour with you when you go across country?
No, so you could call what I do touring, but usually with a different lineup, normally we'll just go out for a weekend.
Okay.
So maybe that's a tour, maybe it's not. I don't know how you define it, but it's hard to do any more than three or four dates now. On a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're not playing with a full band. So we'll go out for 4 days, though, and go out to Ohio. We've gone to Kentucky, Wisconsin, you know, all over the Midwest. And actually, this Saturday, we're playing at the Vegetable Buddies in South Bend.
Which I am hearing more and more and more about that venue.
It'll be my first time there, but they've had some really great lineups there. And speaking of Freak Johnson, we also have Buddy Pearson playing bass on that one.
Wow. Now, is that a Sammy Tuttle show? Are you working with Sammy, the producer, on that?
No.
No? Because he books a lot of shows there.
Yeah, so I run Slink Entertainment's my promotional company, and I pretty much do everything myself.
Okay.
I don't have a manager, I don't have a booking agent, everything's in-house, and so I have to work, you know, 24 hours a day.
There are a lot of hats.
But, you know, when you love what you do, it's not work.
That's why you're so easy to reach. Every time I, like, memo or text you,
I'm always
you are right
the
there
phone.
Back. And most musicians are like, hey, can you do this? Hear from next day. You're like, 3 seconds later.
That's how you get the opportunities.
Now, you're playing those shows, Indy, Peoria, Chicago, with Melvin Seals. And you mentioned Jerry Garcia Band. He's an alumni of that. How did you tie in with him?
So Melvin has played with Terrapin Flyer, a Chicago Grateful Dead tribute act, who I actually played keyboards with. I'd play some keyboards. And so every once in a while, I'd go to one of the shows that Melvin was playing, and we got
Is
to
he
talking.
Local?
No, he's out in the Bay Area, San Francisco. So, yeah. And then I met his manager, Mike, out in L.A. over earlier this year, and that's when we really started talking about it. And I've just been growing the band organically from Northwest Indiana into Chicago, down to Indy, and then slowly but surely all over the country. And as you open up who's available, once you're all over the country, you can almost get any player if you can make make all the details right.
Mm-hmm.
So this year we've had some really big, amazing shows, and next year's looking to be bigger and better.
Now, do you have sheet music for some of them? Do you actually chart stuff?
Scott Pizzera, a local music teacher, bass player, and guitarist, does all my sheets, and really got to thank him because he does a really great job with it. So, yeah, beforehand, I'll just send the music and send the sheets to all these musicians, and hopefully they learn them. Sometimes they don't, but that's part of the fun.
Well, let's play another cut. Let's see. What should we do? Do you want to do the double shot, as we like to call it, which is Everyone Has Their Days, into the outro?
Yeah, let's do that one, because that'll sync up a little of what we did in the studio. So Everyone Has Their Days was a song that I had written. I think Fresh Hops played it a few times. But so that was the composed part. And then we had what I'm calling the outro, was just basically in the studio jam. So what was nice on this album is I took a little bit of my approach with the band to making a record. Mm-hmm. And it works a little differently, but it was still the same spirit of what I do.
So on stage.
You can kind of hear a little example of it here.
All right. From Slink, Joe Marsnick Band, and Everyone Has Their Days, and This Day Is Yours. We'll be right back. Pink is the name of the album. Joe Marsnick Band is the name of the group playing it. And that's some tasty stuff. Everyone Has Their Days into a little jam there simply called Outro. Joe is our guest tonight. He's the band leader, guitarist, songwriter, arranger, probably sweeps up after the band is done. I mean, you seem to sometimes do it all. I did notice on here some mutual friends, and I was just curious as to their part in your career that you gave them a special thanks, and that is Roger and Patty Joe Porter. I love those people like family, and they I see they're there. They're good people. What did they do for you?
Well, Roger will tell you he bankrolled the band in the early days, and he probably did to some extent. But Fresh Hops used to do the jam night on Tuesdays at Finnegan's for right when we started, a big early part of our career. And it was a blessing to be able to have a place to play in front of people every week and try out new ideas.
And a steady gig. That never hurts.
And Roger supported so many of the great, you know, this kind of music, you know, for however long he's had that place.
And before that at Club Dimension.
That's right.
You know, where I knew him from. But he and Patty Joe, his wife, are wonderful people. In fact, you're playing New Year's Eve at one of their places, the Patrician.
Yep, we'll be doing New Year's Eve with, I got Nick Kazonis on guitar, Andy Sutton on drums, and Chris Sloan on bass. And we are going to have a funky good time.
Andy Sutton, we just were talking about him off air. He seems to always come up. Yeah, he's another guy that's never sleeps.
Yep,
ever.
He does a great jazz jam at Region Ale on Sundays.
And you have been sitting in the last couple of times with him.
Yeah, I was the guest host 2 weeks ago. He had Billy Foster last week. He gets some crazy good guests. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he does it. But yeah, and if you're a musician, go check it out. You can sit in. It's every Sunday from 12 to 3. It's free. I'm actually going to be playing the Region Ale on December 2nd. It's a Saturday.
And that's your own gig?
Yep. Yeah, okay. I'll be solo, actually, solo acoustic. So a little chance to see me doing something different.
Now, how do you approach that? I mean, some of this stuff can't be transported back to an acoustic bass.
So this stuff, really, I can't play any of it. So I've kind of developed an alter ego playing, I wouldn't say singer-songwriter, but I do sing a lot more. And a lot more blues, Chicago blues, acoustic blues.
More cover kind of stuff?
Yeah, I have probably about 10 original tunes that I do. And eventually I'll record it, but I just don't feel like I'm there as a singer yet. So that's why it's fun to do these gigs.
Are you doing the jazzy stuff too, like the Chick Corea acoustic or anything like that?
A little bit. Unfortunately, I like to get paid for that stuff. So, you know, if you want to do instrumental jazz, there's not a lot of venues that you can do that in. But I love that music and still play it at home. But yeah, this is more covers and classic rock and stuff like that. And then I have one this Friday, Black Friday, at the Franklin House in Valpo with the great Bill Romer on drums and Janice Wallen on bass. So I know I've been just yelling out random dates. So you can go to my website, joemarsnickband.com. And check out the dates, or on Facebook, Joe Marsnick Band. I've got a bunch posted on there.
And to run through real quick again, November 22nd, the House Pub in St. Charles, and that's with Buddy Guy's keyboardist Marty Salmon.
Marty Salmon, yeah, amazing
and,
talent.
Franklin House, you just mentioned, on November 24th, that's in Valpo. Vegetable Buddies, the fast-growing in popularity venue in South Bend that I keep hearing about and have to go see, that's November 25th.
With Crazy Kofi.
With Kofi Baker, yeah. And then December 7th through 9th, with Melvin Seals of Jerry Garcia Band. Dates are back-to-back in Peoria, Indy, and Chicago. And, of course, New Year's Eve at the Patrician here in Schererville, Indiana. And what's next for you? We talked about you've got new material. You're looking maybe to get some financing. Are you going to do another GoFundMe? Or
I don't want to, but when you don't have a set band, you can't ask guys to save money when they're only playing with me for one night. So I got to maybe do some cartwheels in the streets or something. But definitely looking to do a new album next year. And
just keep playing a lot?
I've done close to 300 gigs for the past 4 years now. And I can feel things are getting better, seeing light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm just enjoying and appreciating everything so much more as things happen, but still want to work just as hard and keep bringing the music out there. Because that's one of the few joys we have in life right now is music, because you can forget about everything and just tune out.
Right. And we need to tune out.
Sometimes.
I'll tell you. The news is like an instant loop all the time. It's just repeat, repeat, repeat. We've talked a lot about where you're at now, where you're going. Let me just touch briefly on how a guy from Northwest Indiana came to do what you do. What, when and why did music impact you? When did you say, this is what I want to do?
So there's a couple of key moments. One, growing up, I had a good friend who lived in Pine Island with me. His name was Jeff Cunningham, and he played acoustic guitar and sang. And that was probably one of the big initial things that led me to pick up an instrument. He actually sold me my first guitar on October 1st, 2000. So that was like an early influence. And then going to music school at Indiana State in Terre Haute, which isn't a big party school, and so you don't have much to do but practice. And mm-hmm. that was a huge blessing in disguise. And then my guitar teachers, Brent McPike and piano instructor John Spicknell, they gave me a lot of opportunity to gig out when I probably shouldn't have been gigging.
Was that at
good
college?
Enough. Yeah, but okay. It was a small school, so it's not like you have 100 grad students who are going to take all the gigs. You know, we'd go be playing in a small restaurant, and I learned more doing those gigs than I learned in college. But it really inspired you, and you got some real experience playing out. And so that was a big turning point. And then, you know, I got out of college and came home about 10 years ago now. And it's been a wild ride for the past 10 years, but every year just keeps getting bigger and crazier and more musical and just riding the wave.
Well, everyone has somebody they first start out sort of emulating or looking to for stylistic advice or technique. Who are your influences as far as a guitar player and then also as a songwriter when you started to write?
So the guitar kind of, it breaks into a few camps, and I kind of been breaking that down lately into, there's the Chicago blues element. The Buddy Guy, the Muddy Waters, even, you know, the British guys, Eric Clapton and them. The jazz guys, Wes Montgomery was huge.
Okay.
John Scofield, Will Bernard, these different jazz sounds. And then just the music of New Orleans has always been a huge interest of mine. And there's so much rhythm in that music, which also then kind of leads into the jazz world, too. And then the whole Grateful Dead and the psychedelic rock thing was a big part of it. So if you can kind of fuse those four camps together, you get a little picture of where I'm coming at. But always on the search of something new, a different sound, a different feel, different groove every night. And so you're always pushing for something that maybe you'll never get, but at mm-hmm. least you're striving for it.
Well, we've seen a lot of musicians come and go. We've seen the ones that stick around are the ones that always evolve and don't keep playing the same thing over. And I don't think anyone can ever accuse you of that. you take that to heart. Let's play a final song. Is there anything we haven't touched on you'd like to, Joe?
Yeah, thank you for all you do, Tom Lounge. You do a lot for music in this area. So, you know, we just got to remind people to go out and see bands. That is one of the things that is getting harder and harder is, you know, money gets tight or whatever it is. We need you to come out and support us. So that means you have to get up off of your seat and
turn
go
the
into
off.
The venue and see a band. And if they ask for $5 at the door, don't get upset, because that $5 goes to pay the band. So that's important. You know, a cover, it shouldn't be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bands want to get paid. We put a lot of time into what we do. So, you know, support the bands that you like and actually go see them.
And buy a CD if they're available, and t-shirts,
hey,
and bumper stickers, because that winds up putting gas in the tank so you can go to the next gig.
That's correct. So
all
let's
right.
keep this Midwest music scene strong.
And let's get your butts off of the sofa. And on that note, perfect segue into this last song from Slink. This is Sofa, the Joe Marsnick Band. JoeMarsnickBand.com is where you'll find them.
Thank you,
Thank you for tuning in. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.